Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings and greetings, blessed souls. We're alive because we want to stay alive. In Torah Chaim, instructions of life toward Chesed, instructions of kindness toward Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're tuned to the inner higher frequency of blogtalkradio.com. This is Soul Class 489, Heart to Heart from Jerusalem to the rest of the world, program presentation number 36. Blessed is our Creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the human family experience. It's now 10.02 a.m. live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA Unified Souls, actually, which corresponds to 5.02, now 5.03, live from the holy city of Jerusalem, Israel, eternal land, flowing and growing with Torah revelations. In a moment, we'll have international human rights activist Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goltek, who will be joining us today to discuss how to redirect mass consciousness of human beings who throughout history have perceived unique human beings as merely handicapped or disabled. R-D-E-G will explain how those handicapped or disabled human beings are actually handicapable and uniquely abled. Meanwhile, I openly invite you to check out Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstein and his wife of valor, Chana Tova's website, to empower you to assist them to collaborate with atypical human beings and their blessed families. And the website that you can connect to is www.hearttoheartamerican.org//jerusalem.html. Our call in number to listen in is 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. I just want to mention, blessed souls, as a hakdama, as a preface to today's program. Last week we talked about Rav Velvo Marantz, all of Hashem, a blessed memory, who passed away the Friday night before the 3,327th time we of Israel have accepted the Torah upon ourselves with all the written and oral Torah traditions. And I couldn't find any of his music to share with you. So today we share this music. So appropriate it is that a man who now is abiding in the bosom of heaven, I'm sure basking in the light of the Creator, Rav Velvo Marantz, we can play his song Heaven. I hope to play it more on more programs, not just this one, as a tribute to this mighty soul, humble and strong human being who lived to 85 years old, and now he's at the next level of life, as the Rebbe was known to say, Lubavitcher, that is, not to think about death. yes, there is a process of death of the body, but however, there is the process of the ascension of the soul to the next level of life, blessed souls. With that being said as well, I want to give a big shout of thanks to Rabbi Michal Dobry, who is the son-in-law, L'Havdil Ben Chaim L'Chaim, of Rav Zelva Morantz, who forwarded him this music and said the family is putting together a compilation of his music, which hopefully will be accessible to the internet. And you know, once that music becomes accessible to the internet, I plan to play a lot of Rav Zelva Morantz's music of blessed memory, because this music is the music of the man who was known in his lifetime as Mr. Music. With that being said, we're going to call in now and welcome in live from Jerusalem, the city of gold, or some say the city of gold stock, Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock. Good afternoon, Eliezer.
Hello, Don. How are you? How's the weather in New York today?
Actually, quite pleasant. Quite pleasant. And we might get a bit of rain in the next day or two, but that's okay because that's Hashem's blessings upon us.
Right. And here in Yerushalayim, it's probably in the mid-80s with a slight freeze, and it's a beautiful, beautiful day. Anyhow, listen, there's an ancient Jewish proverb that says that a Jewish wife will forgive and forget, but she'll never forget what she forgave. So, be careful. So it seems like there was a civil servant. He gets badly hurt. He's falling down some stairs in the Ministry of Absorption here in Yerushalayim. So they take him to the Hadassah Hospital, where he remains in a coma for several days. Finally, his eyes open, and his doctor tells him, "Listen, my friend, I have some bad news and I have some good news. First of all, you're never going to be able to work again." "New," muttered the injured bureaucrat. "What's the bad news?"
I'll tell you why I hesitate, because I know by the Rebbe, there's no matter, the Rebbe's viewpoint was that we never retire. We just go on to other things, but we don't sit back. And,
it was an Israeli joke.
Yeah, not a Lubavitcher Rebbe joke, anyhow. That's for sure.
No. And speaking of which, by the way, and you mentioned neshamas that have gone on to continue their existence in another dimension, we should mention that the maskir of the Rebbe, Rabbi Binyamin Klein, Alei Shalom, just passed away on Friday, the Levaya was Friday as well. So we should say something about that, just to mention that he was a great neshama and obviously had a tremendous connection with being able to observe the life and times of the Rebbe from very up close. And he was a remarkably nice and gentle soul, and I really enjoyed all of my interactions with him, which were few, but there were a number of them. And every time I found him to be a soft-spoken and, you know, very insightful kind of a person. So just thought we'd mention that and wish his family should have wish them condolences on his passing, and Amakam Yenachmas Kam B'Toy Shar V'Etzion Yerushalayim, and we should only hear good news, you know, and we can rectify the whole thing with the arrival of one person.
I was told that actually he was born and he was raised in the first part of his life in Jerusalem, Yerushalayim. So there he's a kindred spirit. Here you are now living your life there until the Mashiach comes and further. And there's someone who left the Holy Land to serve as one of the Rebbe's secretaries. And
I saw a picture of him at the Kotel putting on tefillin when he was younger, much younger, like, you know, Bachur kind of years. And I thought it was
What I was told is that he came to Chabad Lubavitch, to Torah's Emes, the yeshiva, the heralded yeshiva in Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, and that's what got him. I was told he wasn't originally from a Lubavitch family, but he saw the light of Torah's Emes from Yerushalayim, from the Chabad yeshiva,
right.
And that drew him in, and then eventually it led him to interact with the great merit of interacting directly, working for the Rebbe.
My two oldest boys actually went to Torah's Emes, so. It's
beautiful.
Quite an interesting kesher, huh? After all these years, here I am in Yerushalayim. Anyhow, you wanted to start out with something, because I have a couple of interesting announcements that I have to make here. So,
well,
go ahead.
Yesterday I was looking in the last couple of days, and I openly encourage anyone who is an English reader that is not yet fluent in the Hebrew, even though I have attained a certain level of fluency, it doesn't bother me to consult with a weekly tabloid. I don't know, tabloid, it's actually like a newspaper. It's almost like a mini book. It's about 150-plus pages every week, drenched with Torah. It's called Chayenu. It's for daily Torah study. It was started by a group of nice people from South Africa. And basically, what they do is they glean teachings from various sources. This one is coming from the Daily Parsha Insight, from a book called Daily Wisdom, which was compiled and edited by Rabbi Moshe Yaakov Wisniewski, who you might know, Eliezer. And this particular teaching, the next two teachings I want to share, and then maybe later on the program I'd like to share another teaching, concerns two subjects that I think are near and dear to your heart. The first one concerns what's written in the book of Numbers, chapter 8, verse 24, where it says, from 25 years old and upwards, the Levites must enter the service. And the Rebbe elucidated from his Likutei Sichos, volume 13, pages 16 through 19, the Levites were given the responsibility of carrying the tabernacle, the Mishkan, and its vessels through the desert. God led the Jews through the desert with the tabernacle, in which his presence was openly manifest in order to subdue the forces of evil, which the uninhabited, uncultivated, desolate, and dangerous desert embodies. Similarly, the Rebbe continued, our own environment can sometimes seem to be like a spiritual desert devoid of godliness. In fact, it may sometimes appear to us that we ourselves have become a desert, meaning that we have developed habits that are contrary to our task of spreading divine consciousness. How can we possibly hope to change ourselves, let alone the world around us, when these habits and modes of behavior have already become ingrained within us? Here we can learn from the Levites. They did not even begin training for their occupation until they were 25 years old. Yet they were nevertheless empowered to begin their holy service at this age. And I would say it's a relatively late stage in life, because generally speaking, people have already finished their bachelor's or their postgraduate degree, or they're working on their PhD. And yet these Levites were basically starting the school for the Levites at the age of 25 and would learn for the next 5 years. But the Rebbe continued, God gives us, too, the ability to remake ourselves and begin new directions in life, even though we may feel unqualified, unprepared, or unworthy to carry them out. All we have to do is make use of his assistance. And one more terse teaching to connect to what we just learned, blessed souls, from the verse in chapter 9, verse 11, God told Moses, if someone was unable to offer up the Passover sacrifice on the 14th of Nisan, which is the traditional day for the bringing of the Paschal Lamb, he must offer it up on the afternoon of the 14th of Iyar, the second month. The lesson of the second Passover is that it is never too late to set things right. Even if one is spiritually sullied or has wandered far from the realm of holiness, God still gives him a fresh opportunity to rewrite the past and right all wrongs. And that's from the Hayom Yom of the 14th of Iyar. So Eliezer, again, you as a Levi, I'm sure you're taking that first teaching about the Levium to heart, because in terms of heart to heart, you started relatively in the second stage of your life already as a father, and you might have been a grandfather already by that time. And the thing is, too, it's never too late to set things right. You're out to do the avoda of the Levium to correct, because the avoda of Levium are to be teachers and exemplary figures in society of how to remove the stigma of atypical human beings.
Well, actually, we began our process in 1964, so I wasn't even married
right
then.
Okay.
But it was a second chance, because after I learned about the whole concept of Down syndrome intellectually and personally and professionally by working in the field, from that point until the early 90s, or the late 80s, early 90s, when our daughter was born, it was always just a professional activity. But then came the opportunity to make it a much more personal event in our lives. I read a story on Chavez that shows how quickly a person's life can change. There was a fellow named Moses. His name was Moses, who was a surgeon in Vienna. And it turned out that the Belzareva, this is in 1854 this story took place, the Belzareva became very ill, and they couldn't, they had no way of treating him in Poland at the time, you know, where he was. So they packed up and headed off to Vienna. When they arrived in Vienna, they came to a specific hospital that was known to have to treat these specific types of ailments, whatever it was he had. It wasn't clear exactly what it was, but he, after an examination, they realized he needed a surgery and he needed it quickly. And they asked the seat of the woman and asked who was the best surgeon, you know, around. They said, "Oh, this is Doctor. I think his name was Luzak." And his name was Moses Luzak. So they wheeled the Belzareva into the surgery suite, and this Moses Dr. Luzak, Moses went by, grew up in Poland. His name was Moshe Yitzchak Luzak. When he was younger, and after he spent time, you know, studying and learning in yeshiva or whatever, his parents were not that religious, so it didn't mean anything to him. You know, he didn't find a connection to it. So he left the yeshiva and made his way to Vienna, where he entered a gymnasium, like a high school, and excelled at his studies beyond their wildest expectation, and he eventually wound up being accepted to medical school, excelled in medical school, and became the top surgeon in the world at that time for this gastroenterology, which is a surgical specialty. So he's standing there with the mask on, you know, and they're getting ready to administer the anesthesia to the Belzareva, and the Belzareva rolls over and looks at him and says, and you have to remember that this Moses has obviously put his best foot forward with the world, and everybody sees that he's, you know, like they are, you know. He's not Jewish, he's like they are, you know. So Belzareva rolls over and looks at him and says, "Do you believe that there's one God in the world and that one God created everything?" The doctor looks at him, shakes his head, nods his head in approval, and of course everybody in the room like gasps, you know, they can't believe that this doctor who nobody ever approaches is having a conversation with his patient on the table, you know. So the Belzareva looks at him and he says, "And do you believe that Mashiach is going to come and redeem the world?" And he thinks for a moment and he says, "I believe that there's a redemption coming in the world, yes, but I don't believe that one person can have that kind of power over other people."
Right.
And everybody in the room kind of like, you know, nodded their, you know, various surprise and approval and whatever. And Belzareva sits up on one elbow and looks directly into his doctor's eyes, Moses' eyes, and he says, "What's your name? What's your Hebrew name? You know, what's his Yiddish name?"
Right.
Moshe Yitzchak. So, as he says the name, Belzer Rebbe is staring at him with a locked eyes, you know. And it was one
right.
of those Rebbe-sha moments. And the people who were in the room say that the doctor began to tremble and shake, and he was breathing like he couldn't control his breathing. And finally, after like 90 seconds, maybe 2 minutes went by, a long time went by, the Belzer Rebbe rolled back down, laid back down on the table, and the doctor began to look around the room, and he was breathing and panting as if he had just run a marathon. You know, he was like really out of breath.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in the room saw this, and they, you know, no one knew what to do. Nobody knew what to say to him. So after he regained his composure, he said, "Okay, we'll begin now." You know, so they began the surgery, and it took 15 days after the surgery. The Belzer Rebbe was in the hospital. Finally, it became obvious that. The surgery, while it may have been a success, the Belzer Rebbe was much further involved than the surgery was able to take care of. So they decided that they were going to take him back to Poland on the train.
Mm-hmm.
And on the train, on the way back to Poland, on the 23rd of Sivan, the Belzer Rebbe passed away on the train.
Mm-hmm.
With his new chassid, Moshe Yitzchak, left the hospital and went with him. So when we say, "Oh, I'm sure there's going to be a redemption, but I doubt that there's one person who can have that kind of power over other people," you know, we need to, you know, life has its little inconveniences along the way. And we need to understand that we're not here for our own convenience. We're here to help others, which is the real reason that a tzaddik is in the world. Tzaddik comes into the world to help others, not to help themselves.
Right.
So it's our position, and I have to mention here at this point, as long as I've told that story, my wife has put together, Chana Tova, my Eishes Chayil, has put together a database that she's working on now. That is, we're doing shidduchim. My wife is actually running this whole project. Shidduchim
mm-hmm.
for people, for Jewish adults with Down syndrome from anywhere in
Beautiful.
The world.
Beautiful.
And the minimum requirement is they have to be at least 21 years of age, because it's our opinion that before 21, nobody in this specific group is ready for a shidduch, and
right.
Specifically and especially for marriage. But after 21, it's a good time to start looking into these things and researching them. And we've actually had an opportunity to meet several families and talk with them. And, you know, everybody has a different level and a different perspective and a different need for a shidduch. And so if anyone wants to contact my wife, and get their child, their adult child, involved in this project. You can reach her in Yerushalayim if you're calling from within Israel. It's 055-66-50067. If it's outside of Eretz Yisrael, the number is 011-972, and then the area, the 972 is the country code, and then the number is 55-66-50067. And if you'd like to reach her online, you can reach her at CTG, that's Chana Tova Goldstock, CTG 716 torahtalks@gmail.com.
Eliezer, this strikes at the core of what I read of that sicha. I mean, if you go back to 1991, even though already you had, say, 27 years in the field of mental health or psychological well-being or empowering human beings, did you ever, in your wildest dreams, like, say, going back to 1964, even 1991, when Yonah Chaya Mushka was born, that Indeed. You'd be having this discussion internationally on the radio to talk about how your wife is now in a position to empower other people with UP syndrome to start a life as husband and wife to complete the wholeness of their souls? I mean, come on. Did you really think about that in 1991?
Well, I'll tell you how far away from that I was. It was in 1990. We never dreamt that we would become parents of a child with Down syndrome, let alone wind up with two of them in our house, you know? But you're 100% correct. We had no idea that we would be part of fulfilling people's lives and empowering them. We have now, we're now working with several agencies here in Yerushalayim to develop apartments, private apartments, whether they need assistance or some assistance, a lot of assistance, so people will be able to make a shidduch and find a find their place. Now, if they want to get married, they want to find their place and get married and live in Israel, we'll help them out with that. If they want to live in America, we also have representatives that are working all over the United States, and we have our friends that are, we have friends in Austria, we have friends in I'm talking about English-speaking, you know, religious Jewish people with who happen to have been born with Down syndrome, Australia, South Africa, England, Italy, and of course, you know, not to forget, of course, we have Florida. You know, these are countries all by themselves, right? Florida, Chicago, Los Angeles,
right.
New York. So anybody who's interested, please, you know, don't be shy, don't be bashful. Even if you're not quite at the 21-year age limit, you can still submit the information, and by the time your child is 21, hopefully we'll have enough people in the database to be able to make some really, really solid introductions. And this is going to be the kind of shidduchim that are done with real heart and real care and consideration and insight. My wife and I decided that, yeah, amen is right. Kel Mouth Naman. So now I have to, last week I was supposed to come on.
Right.
We had a problem because Mendy was graduating. Well, wasn't graduating. It turns out he was, I have to tell you what's going on in these kids' life. Okay? He's turned 21. So in Israel at 21, all of your childhood special needs services ends and a whole new thing begins. It's like, you know, we were talking about Binyamin Klein, I'm not trying to say Chas V'Shalom, you know, but it is a form of rebirth, you know, of a letting something pass away so that something new can be reborn, you know. So when we say that, you know, he's allowing everything to pass on. And so here are some of the things that he's done and his accomplishments and what he's just in the next, last week, this week, and next week, okay? Sunday night, he was in a thing called Kochav Nolad, which is Star is Born. He performed as a Ninja Turtle. It was a riot. And that was sponsored by Shalva. It was in Binyanei Uma. It was a sold-out audience. If you go online, you can see there's almost 2,000 people in the audience. I think it holds 1,900. There wasn't one seat empty in the whole place. The show was amazing. The costumes, and they had every type of ability that you can possibly imagine on every level. There was a young lady who sang, who's got a voice like, I mean, she's blind, and and she's part of the Shalva program. What an amazing show. I mean, it was just something spectacular. Then, the next night, Menti is in this band where they play drums. And they have a whole variety. I think there's seven or eight guys that play bongos, okay? And you can see, you can go online and see Menti doing his solo. And he was in a nightclub. They did the show in a nightclub called the Yellow Submarine to give it a real, you know, a real flair. And Mendy, instead of going in looking like a real cool cat, you know, which is most everybody did, he went in looking a little bit more like Leonard Cohen, you know. But a busted. He dressed up, he put his hat on and his jacket, and he wouldn't take his hat and jacket off during the entire evening.
Right.
He wanted to show that, you know, look, you know, I can do it, but I can still be, you know, I'm still a Dati from boy, you know.
Yeah. Eliezer, we have 1 minute and 47 seconds of his live performance. Can we share it with the audience right now before you
Please.
Go on to elaborate? What?
Are you kidding?
Okay.
Absolutely.
So
this is his solo, right? Yeah.
Yeah, this is about, well, there's a drummer who comes in, and then at the, I'd say the last 30-plus seconds, but so you'll hear Mendy Goldstock, Bongo Mendy, as we know him in Crown Heights.
The whole thing is the setup. This whole segment is a setup for his solo. So you're hearing him, you know, actually, you know, just play it. You know,
okay, here we go.
Oh, boy.
He's playing right now. Bongo Mendy Goldstock. I think eventually he's going to be auditioning for the next Hasidic New Wave band in Eretz Israel, Eliezer.
I don't think he's going to have time. Wait till you hear the rest of this. Then,
okay.
The following night, way to go. Thank you very much. That was fun to listen to. that was great to watch, by the way. Really something special.
Sure.
You know what I realized I didn't do today? Unbelievable. I must be slipping. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, shehakol ne'yah b'dvaray.
Amen. And Rabbi Goldstock just sanctified cyberspace in time and place with probably a pretty hot cup of Java by pronouncing publicly.
Cold cup of water.
Okay, a cold cup of water. Blessed are you, Lord, creator of the universe, who manifests everything through his blessed attribute of speech. And I'll tell you the truth, I cheated, Eliezer. I made a brocha silently because I didn't know if we were going to get to the to the blessings part of the program because we've been so engaged in our discussion so far. But I hope to make my after blessing with you at the end of the program.
Great, great. I'm happy I remembered that because it's become kind of a tradition in our programming efforts here. Okay,
yes.
So then the following night, okay, so that was the first night was the Kochav Nolad. The second night was the Bongos. The third night was Yachad. They have a course that they go to, Mendy and Suri go to every Monday night for relationships to help them, you know, what's appropriate, you know, what you say, what you don't say, who do you shake hands with, who do you have conversations with, what's an appropriate way to respond to, you know, how are you, and those kinds of things. And
right.
Along with that, they also learned space. You know, like you have your Dalai Lamas, you know, and if somebody comes inside your space and you don't want them there, then you have to learn how to, in a firm way, but in a nice way, be able to politely tell them to back off, you know.
Right.
You're too close. And this course was run by the people at Yachad, and they... this is their second year, Suryamani's second year, and they received their certificate of completion, and even though they have another one or two classes yet to go, but they had a big banquet at the OU Center. And they don't, I mean, they really made a beautiful, beautiful banquet. They had chicken, two different types of chicken, and they had, you know, it was really well done, you know. And some of the parents got up, a couple of parents got up and spoke. A couple of the, there's a young lady named, I think her name is Ruckel. And she got up, she goes to, she has Down syndrome, but she attends Bar-Ilan University. She's studying, I think, social work or something like that.
Wow.
Doing an amazing, amazing job there. I don't know exactly what she'll come out with, but she certainly made me proud, you know. Then next week we have the Army. There's going to be a ceremony. Mendy's completed his second year of reserve service in the Army, where he goes once a week and puts in an entire day of working and being part of the Army, and he loves the Army. He's been invited to attend the IAF, the Israeli Air Force graduation and demonstration, the jet. You know, the jets fly overhead. They do a program where they do a show off a little bit. He's been invited to that, and nobody can go to that except for members of the service. So he's been pretty nice, huh? Then the police force is going to have a graduation, a completion, and a thank you ceremony at the police department. Then he's got high school graduation coming up, which will be on, which is scheduled tentatively for a Friday, because Friday, it's interesting, in Israel, Friday is the Sunday of the society. In other words,
Sunday,
in America, everybody's off. In Israel, everybody's off on Friday. But we're trying to impose our wishes, because Friday, even though it's a day off, it really is a day for preparation for Shabbos.
Right.
We didn't really have to break the preparation schedule for a graduation, so we're hoping that they'll change it to Sunday evening, and we'll have it as an evening. They did it last year outdoors, and it was beautiful. We attended last year's graduation, you know, because some of Mendy's friends graduated, and it was and Mendy was part of the program that last year.
Right.
Then he has, after he finishes graduation, the Shalva program that he belongs to is going to a lot for 4 days at a hotel. Now, I think we mentioned before that they were on a cruise with Yachad, with their Yachad buddies. They went on a cruise to Greece and Rhodes, the Isle of Rhodes, and several other places, and they had a flat. We saw a video, by the way, at the banquet the other night at the OU Center, where we got to see all of the things that they did. My gosh, I had no idea what they do and how much they accomplished. It was really a beautiful, beautiful program. Then they'll be going to Eilat. Now, he went last year to Eilat. Now, this program that he's going with Shalva is the end of the end of that journey for him, because after 21 he has to leave high school, he has to leave Shalva.
Right.
Those are school related activities. The Yachad program, the heart to heart program, and the Machon Shir V'Zimra programs, those things that he'll be able to continue on with, because those are designed for adults. And this is a typical example of why we are so necessary here in Israel now and in the United States. We're still dealing with, you know, infants that are that are creating problems in families, where families cannot
right.
adjust, where they can't you know, outright accept the matzah that they've been presented. So here we have an opportunity to be really relevant in many, many people's lives. It's our position, and it always has been, that children born with Down syndrome don't belong in facilities or homes or institutions.
Right.
And, you know, without parents and siblings to emulate and to love and to be loved by, that is a tragic loss. And these placements are that people seek out are poor excuses. And the excuses, by the way, that are given by administrators, doctors, rabbis, parents, they're just simply not enough to justify what they wind up doing to these young children, these infants, and how it winds up, that abandonment winds up affecting them, as offspring for the rest of their lives. I mean, it's a horrible thing to for a child to wake up and realize that, when parents are confronted with a profoundly distressing situation such as the birth of a child with Down syndrome, their decision-making is very impaired. And they don't have the same capacity or cognitive function that usually prevails in the lives of a parent, because it's a trauma. The parents
True.
Become extremely vulnerable, and any external influence or suggestion, a negative suggestion, becomes, it only increases the complexities and the long-term implications that these people are dealing with. And it's really a very, very difficult thing. It's cruel, really, to ask a parent, what do you want, when their child is born? You know, in other words, that's not the time to say to somebody, consciously or unconsciously, you're going to be influenced by one opinion or another. That's the
right.
wrong time for that discussion to take place. What they need to do is come to a decision based on access to resources that go beyond the expertise, of a single opinion or a group of opinions that are all negative. And this should include parents who should be involved with every single child. Should be parents who also have a child that was born with, Up syndrome. But they should also afford some sufficient time for considering options and alternatives other than the ones, the only ones that are being thrust at them. So I always say this because, treatment and care, while it's continued to improve in quality, and our schools and yeshivas have now got the obligation to accept the responsibility to educate our children. Look,
right.
Special education is going to be gone. I have been trying to bring this point home to many people over the course of the past 10 years. In the next year or two, there's not going to be any more special education. There's not going to be any more of these homes, where you can send a child, it becomes an adult, and you can send them away to an apartment or a assisted living
right.
in America. It's not going to happen that way anymore. What the Obamacare, if you read it, it clearly challenges the parents to keep their child at home as an adult.
Well, Eliezer, can I chime in? Because I can tell you this from the field of mental health, that already from the OM, I think it's OP, they changed it. It used to be OMRDD. It's now OMPWWD, something like that. Whatever it is. It's basically dealing with people with the children who are handicapable, or society would say are delayed with some of their cognitive functions. The thrust is to keep the children either at the parents' home or in a foster care system, not residential because the society deemed that, or the New York State funding resources have deemed that it's no longer viable. And I just want to chime in one more thing concerning the emotional abandonment, sometimes physical abandonment of children. I know of one case of a person who is not handicapped, but has some sort of emotional issues. You might call them mental health issues. And his parents abandoned him. And to this day, 20 years later, after he was abandoned by his parents to the social services system, he still relates to me this time by time. He was in an adolescent residence, and he was about 14 years old. No, he was 11 years old, excuse me. And they were playing ball with a bunch of other kids, you know, kids who don't know each other, other than the fact that they live in the same residence. And one of the kids was 3 years old and punched him in the face. And he was mamish, so bewildered. Why did he deserve to be punched in the face? Obviously, he didn't. He didn't start anything, he said, just that he took the ball, he caught the ball. And the counselor intervened and said, well, go to your room. We'll take care of this. And he told me that he felt such a sense of being so alone in the world. To this day, he still has
rejection.
A problem with feelings of abandonment to the point where he feels at times
rejection.
Not just rejection, Lizzie, he's afraid to become fully independent because he has worked full-time jobs, that one day, if he gets a full-time job and moves out of the system, that he'll lose his job and become homeless again and be abandoned once more. Such is the damage of being abandoned by one's parents. And this is someone who is fully cognitive, who has a couple of college degrees, and yet he's still dealing with this ambivalence from almost 20 years ago, if not 21 years already, that he was left to do things on his own without his parents because they weren't educated how to deal with his situation.
Yeah, well, you know, Mendy's story is obviously very similar to that. He had abandonment issues at a very early age and had some very severe medical problems. I'm sure you remember those years. So, well, we've spoken
about them.
I know, with other people. Look, there's no more corners to cut. You know, there's no more status quo. We've now entered into a situation where children with all types of handicaps, right, have always been here, but they're not in our schools. And the schools, you know, I noticed that there are issues of abuse and all kinds of things that are coming out of the woodwork now. And I think the next thing you're going to see is the cover-up that has been going on for as many years with the fact that the schools refuse to deal with or accept distinguished children with special needs and differently able. Why is that an issue of any kind? Because everyone hides behind the fact that, oh, our teachers are not as well trained, and our teachers don't know. But, you know, you're dealing with the brightest teachers,
right,
that the Jewish people have to offer. And they're the brightest, they're the brightest of the bright that are coming out today. This isn't the guy who couldn't find a job who took a job teaching today. You've got guys who are really, and women, ladies and gentlemen, who are teaching in the yeshiva system today, who are outstanding educators, whether they were educated in the public school system or whether they were only educated through the yeshiva system and took up through the Bureau of Jewish Education or whatever. If we're going to define our people by their disability rather than define them as full human beings, and we're going to continue to perpetuate this dependence on the professional care model, the medical foster care model, you know. But it seems like the society is going to force us to eventually accept and deal with, because nobody's going to be able to afford to provide the type of care that's been provided for the past 10 years through the state of New York and the city of Los Angeles and the city of Chicago, et cetera, et cetera. These societal attitudes...
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question, which now, I mean, I don't want to get polemic, but I'm sure you'll have what to say about this. Not so much about a decision. You know, everyone knows Bruce Jenner. I mean, it's pretty, to me, it's one of the biggest shocks that, you know, this man has decided to become anatomically a woman, if you want to say that. And one of the things, the point I want to bring out to you is I saw a video last night where he actually fathered four children, and he admitted that while he was going through his stage of how to validate himself or how to get through his ambivalences, working through his own sexuality, that he basically was not there for his children. And his children are trying to come to peace with what was the factors that caused him to distance himself from his first wife and his four children that he fathered with her. And at the end, the family members were gathered together on this video talking about, you know, they basically were validating his feelings for his choices, and they feel this is a new beginning. So my question to you is, why don't we afford the same opportunities for parents who are raising uniquely capable human beings? We should be allowing them to express their feelings and their pain openly in society and validate their feelings. And then just as, say, like the children of Bruce / Caitlyn Jenner are willing to work through his issues, why can't we, are we so aesthetically superficial in modern society that it's only a certain segment of society that will validate their feelings if they're doing something which, you know, we know from a Torah viewpoint, what he did was completely forbidden, to emasculate himself. On the other hand, too, he was getting the full support of his family. So why do we have this great divide in terms of societal perceptions and feelings and who gets the right to be validated, and why aren't parents of uniquely capable children given the open merit, and what they should have is the obligate, and society should be obligated to validate them and help them get through these situations?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that I had no idea who this guy was. I mean, I knew he won an Olympic gold medal. I had no idea that he was back. He was relevant again because of the Kardashian family.
Right.
The Kardashian family as well, I had no idea, were relevant because the only Kardashian I ever heard of defended O.J. Simpson in the match. And made and literally, you know, was part of that legal group called the Dream Team.
Right.
So when all this happened, I'm thinking to myself, who's Bruce, and who's Caitlin, and what does this have to do with it? So I started, of course, with, you know, Google. Thank God for Google, you know. And I go in and I find out that there's a program called the Kardashian Family something, I don't know, and all the kids, their children, his and hers, he was married to Mrs. Kardashian, who was originally married to the lawyer Kardashian, who passed away.
Right.
Now,
right.
All that having been said, it's like I was thinking to myself at the end of the whole thing, who cares? But we live in a society that apparently follows these things,
right.
and really follows it. I mean, you know, you should see if you go on Twitter or you go on any of the other these other online sites, even Facebook. I mean, people are going nuts over this. And I want to say, your assertion or your assumption is that. The reason that our children don't get the same courtesy from the society specifically and the society generally is because none of our children have won an Olympic gold medal in the decathlon and have not married up into a status kind of a family and have not, you know, caught the attention of a large segment of the population. Now, that having been said, I want to say, I remember the Roche once had a discussion with this fellow who came into the yeshiva, and the gentleman was gay. Now, I have to tell you, I grew up in a society that was a little more permissive than the Crown Heights community, say.
Or, right.
You know, in the firm world in general. So I knew people who were gay and who were struggling with that.
Right.
But when I when I embraced my Yiddishkeit from the perspective of a chassid, I understood that there was a right and a wrong. There's a right way to do things, there's a wrong way to do things. Now,
right.
I remember the Rosh having an argument with this fellow, and this fellow said, what am I supposed to do? I have these desires. And I remember the Rosh saying to him, you think I don't have desires?
Right.
And the guy looked at him like, what? Like, you're the Rosh, you know? Like, he says, yeah. He says, I have plenty of desires. He says, but I still have to follow the rules. And he said, and if I don't like, you know, what the situation is, it doesn't mean that I can just go off and take care of my desires. I have to live within the framework of my
right.
of my life. Now, and he was then talking about Taharas and Mishpacha, and he was saying, look, you know, a man has a children, and, you know, he says you have to go for periods of time. He says some people go for a long lifetime without having, you know, without giving in to those desires.
Right.
And then I remember we had a friend of ours, a very dear friend of mine, who was davening in our shul, whom I found out through a family that he openly admitted that he was gay.
Right.
And he wanted to daven from the omelet in our shul. Now, I didn't want to say to him, yeah, okay, go ahead and do it because, you know, I'm a permissive kind of guy, or because I love you and I accept you as you are. It doesn't matter, because that's not halacha. So I went to the Rav and I said, I asked the Rav, what do we do here? And he said a very interesting thing, and it's something that has stuck with me. Maybe I told it to you before, but I'll say it again. His answer was, we don't believe somebody who says something bad about themselves. Halakhically.
Mm-hmm.
But Jew says, I'm something, and it's halakhically wrong to be that. You don't believe him.
Right.
And because we don't believe him, go ahead and daven from the omelet. Now, you know, this person is, the only thing I can say to you is, he's not, I can't believe him, okay? I know what he tells me, but we don't believe bad things, especially if a Jew says something bad about themselves. Now, our society is such that we accept pretty much everything. Even though we don't say that we accept things, we do.
Right.
We're a very accepting society as Jews. So this person went ahead and did something. Why does he need to call attention to what he did to the whole world? Because he thinks he needs to validate himself by gaining... He's got some democracy going out there. We're going to take a vote. How many people say yes to Bruce? How many say no to Bruce? What's his name now? Caitlin?
Caitlin,
so
right.
Caitlin, yeah. Do we get any, how many yeses do I get for Caitlin? How many no's do I get on Bruce? You know, that's not the purpose of what he did. It's a very personal kind of thing. I mean,
right.
From what he's saying, it's a very personal kind of thing. So we have a society where what you brought up was absolutely relevant. A person has Down syndrome, can't hide that. I mean, there are those who, by the way, who go for plastic surgery later in life to diminish the effects of the Down syndrome to give them a little better appearance. It never really eliminates that look, but it certainly can diminish a very extreme case of the stigmata that goes with the physical appearance. But still in all, you can't hide that. And yet, even if you wanted to. But here is something where he could have very quietly gone and done what he wanted to do, stepped out of the picture, out of the... Now, I understand he's trying to advocate for a group of other people, but the group
right.
that he's advocating for is such a cult of people. You have he's advocating for gay people because I guess now he's gay. You know, before he went through this procedure, he was heterosexual. You know,
right.
But now he's a homosexual. So here you have that's a whole new set of problems. Then he's a gender changer. What do they call him? Transgenders. Transgender.
Right.
I don't know what the term is.
Right.
Transgender. And now it becomes this whole chult of other stuff that really has nothing to do with the fact that he had this desire. Why? Because the desire that he had was the difference between right and wrong, between good and evil.
Right.
And he went ahead and gave in to being able to succumb to his desire at the tip of a surgeon's scalpel. Surgeon steps up to the plate and changes his rearranges his anatomy, and poof, you're a and they give you some hormones. Now, can you imagine? I mean, look, yes, we've moved far into the future scientifically. But I love this story, and I'm going to tell it again. I used it in a discussion online, and I hope it makes the point that a scientist can walk into a lab today, in any university in the world, and he'll be able to work in that lab and know how to operate the equipment and know how to handle everything that's there. 100 years from now, that same scientist could walk into a lab and he will have no clue what's going on in that lab. Because Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Still there? Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
People
okay.
contact
so,
me. There, I'm sorry, Eliza. People contact
yeah, yeah, yeah.
me during
ahead,
the program.
I got you.
No. I just want,
so,
but Eliza, I.
So,
yeah,
he's,
go
so
ahead.
Let me just finish this one thought. So, yeah. 100 years from now, this scientist will walk into the lab. He'll have no clue what's going on. A frum Jew walks into shul today, right, in New York, comes to Eretz Yisrael, or goes to Czechoslovakia, or goes to Australia, and he knows what's going on in shul. And 100 years from now, he'll walk into that same shul in any one of these countries, and he'll still know what's going on. So the point is that there's a right and a wrong. There's a good and there's an evil. And there is a desire that we succumb to, and there's a desire that is a wrong desire, and it's erroneous to think that science can dictate what's correct and what's incorrect. Torah
True.
is a universal truth that was given on Har Sinai in front of 3 million people, and no one has ever tried to refute the fact that that act took place, that God spoke to 3 million people. No one. Why? Because it happened.
Right.
So science, by the way, once Albert Einstein came up with the theory of relativity, the Rebbe often pointed to that and said, how can you possibly say that science is correct or incorrect over Torah when you know that the theory of relativity is at play here and that everyone accepts that?
Right.
And that's the point. So I don't know. Your question eludes me. I mean, not the question.
No.
I don't know how to answer that. I don't know how to answer it properly because, to me, it's a message that is not so clear. Rather than accept somebody saying, look, I want to make myself disabled or re-abled, I want to redefine myself. I don't know that, in other words, that's not within the realm of my consciousness is that people who have different, who are differently abled are trying to overcome the stigma and the abilities that they have, but not through surgically altering who they are. It's by trying to find who they are above and beyond their personal desires. And when you have a responsibility of four of your own children, and you neglect that because you're trying to become a woman along the way, I don't know.
No, but the point I want to bring out, if I wasn't clear, I apologize. No, I'm not, you know, the exploration of Bruce Jenner's persona, I'm not really interested in, but the fact that his family were given a national and international forum via the internet to validate his feelings as he, so to speak, disabled himself. And I saw from one article already from someone who went that route and said that, you know, it's likened to someone who gets drunk at the bar and is having a great time getting drunk, but the next morning, i.e. the rest of his life, he's going to wake up with quite a hangover with a tendency to ultimately, if he doesn't really deal with the implications of what he did to himself, of suicide, some sort of other forms of self-abuse. But on the other hand, the parents of uniquely abled human beings, children, as they go into adolescence and adulthood, they're not given the chance to free formally, as it, which is frustrating to me, to be validated for the feelings. We don't want to disable our children. We want to enable their children, and they're met by the apathy and of society. That's the frustration and the point I want you to kind of bring out, like, you know, in your interactions with other parents.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Have to remember, John Langdon Down, okay, because we have to go to him, his initial symptoms that identified the characteristics of Down syndrome were 12. There were 12 symptoms. Today, the list exceeds 120. So it wasn't so much that they embraced or rejected or embraced the symptoms themselves, but they continued to identify them, to deal with them.
Right.
So as we continue to explore this whole concept of you know, people who have Down syndrome, who want to be part of the general population, we still have to deal with all of those symptoms that have already been identified. Now, when I say that, you know, do you know that 20% of females born with Down syndrome are missing their 12th rib?
Wow.
Do you know that? Yeah. And did you know that their tongues are not large? But their mouth cavity is extremely small, and that's why the tongue looks disproportionately large?
Uh-huh.
And that by teaching and training them at a very early age, they are able to control their tongue, and the tongue actually the mouth actually accommodates the actual size of the tongue. So it's like lazy tongue syndrome, you know, that we're trying to make. Now, did you know that air sinuses are usually underdeveloped in children and adults who have Down syndrome? Which causes their frequent blockage, and that's why their mouths are open all the time, not because they're retarded, but because they're having difficulty breathing.
Wow.
Now, you see, these are things that people just don't understand about. These are commonly observable traits that gives the impression that the child is much more retarded than they actually are. And then you have to remember that this open jaw position, combined with an undersized skull and narrow ear canals, are all factors that contribute to they have many ear infections and a high incidence of hearing loss as a result of that. Now, look, because we have we lack a complete knowledge about, you know, the syndrome itself in general amongst the medical and educational communities, there's a marked lack of legitimate treatments and therapies. Now, this man has taken, I'm talking now about the gender bender, where Caitlin now, I guess you have to call her a she now, aside from those, you know, already developed desires, that there's a tremendous amount of psychotherapy that a person needs to go through when they have these inadequacy because of their gender.
Right.
You know, and it works. You know, it starts working with children. Now he's I read an article yesterday. You know, because last night after Shabbos, I was, because everybody's talking about this thing now. And
right.
He said that he was wearing women's undergarments under his clothing when he won the Olympic gold medal. Now, that's a sign of, you know, that's a sign of disturbance.
Right.
Now, I mean, there's some disruption in his. Now, you're going to have people who are going to say, oh, what are you talking about? That's perfectly fine. You know, I mean, because you have those who are saying, you know, I'm reading online, everybody's saying, oh, look, you know, his increased desire and whatever, that's up to him. That's what he wants. That's what he should be able to do, you know?
Right.
You know, I am going to say that he exploited his own personal situation, got sucked into a get-fixed-quick scheme, and like you said, I think he's going to have, and if he doesn't have second thoughts about it, you know, call it a vote. I mean, I can't believe that he's not going to, but I can't believe that this surgery is so readily available to people. There must have been some process he had to go through,
sure.
You know, some modality and understanding and testing and so forth and so on. And he had to explore, you know, his past, his present, and his future to decide, you know, how he wants to live his life. But, you know, there are many medical practices that need to be examined. And there are various treatments. You know, I don't know how it works, but, you know, like, for example, children with Down syndrome have thyroid problems. That's a very
right.
common problem, and one that was never checked, you know, prior to a certain period of time. Like the late 1980s, all of a sudden everybody was getting their kids in to have them checked for T2, T3, T4, thyroid problems, because some of their issues evolve from that. What if he wakes up tomorrow and realizes, with all the hormones and everything he's taking, that maybe he's got some other imbalance in his system, and then all of a sudden he decides, you know, my testosterone's going crazy, I feel like a man again. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, I'm not. But my point is that I guess at his, he must be late in his.
About 64, 65.
There you go. So that's not like a 20-year-old or a teenager that's going through this. So if he wakes up like that, 64, so, you know, he's got, you know, another whatever number of years to live, and he's going to have to suffer through it that way. But, I mean, I suppose at some point in his life, he feels like he made the right move.
Eliezer, I just want to chime in. Shoshana Imhoff Moss just wrote me a message to share with us. Hey, even our tax dollars pay for that operation for prisoner in prison. It's easier to get than insurance.
Really?
That's what she wrote.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Wow.
But But the question is, how easy is it? And we know it's not easy to get the proper servicing, the proper inclusionary educational services for handicapable human beings.
Well, yeah. Look, children. Look. By keeping a child, it certainly does not make your life easier. That's for sure. But by eliminating the child from the family, the members of the family never get consulted about the decision. And later on in life, they may have charata on them. Now, here's where the real problem is. Family is a shared inheritance, right?
Right.
You know, you have a glorious legacy that we all share. And it's greater than any one moment. But, you know, the family, especially a firm family, is always involves God in their lives, right? So
if you're
going to ask me about this, you say, look, a mother and father represent the core the core values of a Jewish family. It's a mother and a father.
Yes.
Now, every home, it depends on warmth and care that's given by the mother and the strength and security that's given by the father, right? And then there's the omnipotent presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, mom is there when you're hurting and you're hungry and you're cold, and your father is there, your tati is always there to protect you, and he's available for all kinds of things. Now, we see a society today who have no clue what we're talking about when we say that. In other words, they're looking at us and saying, that's old-fashioned. Well, it may be old-fashioned, but this is a mitzvah to fill in every day. Just as it's a tefillin, you put on tefillin every day, it's a mitzvah for a father to be involved with the child every day. And
right.
If you're giving a child away, how can you possibly have an involvement with the person in the family?
Right.
If you're not there, or you know, if the child's not there. Look, we all need a family. You know, okay, I understand, you know, if there's two mothers and two fathers, I get that. You know, okay, you have a large family. But a large family relies on and shares the joys and burdens of being a member of a large family. And there's a fullness that we all feel having an extended family. And it's something that I can't explain to people today. You gain an identity and a sense of self, a sense of self and a sense of closeness and support, and your variety that happens in your family happens because you're a part of something that is not limited to a specific category of sexuality. You know, when I talk to people today about, I saw a thing online, I was like shocked. Two women have a child, I don't know how that happened. I don't know whether it was a biological thing or adopted or whatever. But all of a sudden, they're discussing the need for what? All of a sudden, they're discussing the need for a child needs a hormone therapy. Kid's 10 years old.
Wow.
How do you come to that? How do you come to that? I mean, my response was, what are the odds of that happening, right? You know, I mean, when I grew up, nobody had hormonal imbalances. There was, you know, fathers
right.
and mothers and children and everybody. And, you know, we nobody was lost. Nobody was rejected. You know, and keeping a child at home, look, keeping a child can only enrich the family, and by eliminating the myths and
sure.
the fears of the unknown, and then by embracing and understanding and meeting the challenges head on, we all benefit from that, right? So
sure.
my answer is yes. I think that we all probably have times when there are family members that can't cope with certain situations. Yeah, I get that, and we wonder why this personal having all these problems, right? But when it comes to being part of a firm family, we don't just entertain despairing thoughts, you know. We've been compared to the sand and stars, right? And
right.
when we fall low, we're like the sand. And when we rise high, we're like the stars in heaven. It's an example, truthfully. The Rebbe brought out once, I remember he was talking, he said, there's two examples of infinite in this world. Stars in the heaven and the seed of man. They're
mm-hmm.
infinite. There's an infinite supply of stars and seed. Meaning they're all different. And if you think about it, that's really an incredible revelation. Because we always think of infinite as something that's abstract or non-physical, you know, more spiritual. But if you stop and look into the heavens and you stop them, they're endless. The stars in the heavens, endless. The seed of man, endless. The supply, the number of people, and there's no two people that are the same. How is that possible?
Right. I'm going to be rude, but I got a text while you were commenting from Dennis Ron, you know, who was one of my co-hosts during the week of our Blog Talk Soul Class episodes, programming, who made a very pithy comment. Who is needier, Bruce or children with Down syndrome? Who's more in need of
Bruce.
Our attention?
Bruce.
Yeah.
Well, Caitlin. I thank you, Dennis. I appreciate that. But our kids need the right kind of attention, not the type that he's getting. And, you know, if we're going to get publicity of any kind, I want it because our kids are doing the right and responsible kind of thing, and they're resolving conflict in their life properly, and they're joyous. We're joyous because they're in our lives. And that we're a biological family, and there's a mother and a father in the family. I'm embarrassed for him, for her, Caitlin. You know, that's my own personal problem, but I'm very embarrassed. Whoops, Blog Talk Radio is at it again. Look. You know, it's like when you have a child, you say to yourself, oh, my gosh, I just won the lottery. You know, that's the feeling. When your child
right.
is born, you won the lottery, you know.
Yes.
I don't know that changing your gender is necessarily going to... give you that sense that you won the lottery, because like you said, there's always in the back of your mind the possibility that, hey, you know, maybe I'll wake up tomorrow morning and, you know, miss my body parts or whatever.
I believe there is such a syndrome with amputees, Elias. I remember learning about this, that amputees, because the nerve endings, where they are still functioning, they're still sending a message out to the portion that's missing, and the person gets the sensation something is still there. Well, and actually it's been amputated. So who knows what type of...
Yeah, well, you know, look, if we're talking about, you know, one of the greatest shared moments in life is when a mother and a father have a baby.
Yes.
You know, right? And there's an infinite number of possibilities as the potential for having a child. But there are segments of the process that are observed, and we monitor them, and, you know, and we have no control over them. We're just watching.
Right.
We're observers. And yet, we try to nurture and, you know, help. Look, we know that we have our strength in saying Tehillim, and we try to influence the outcome through that. And we know that these are they're our tools. I don't know what tools, you know, there was the spiritual tools, I suppose. you can make up and you can create, you know. I'm always reminded the Baal Shem Tov, you know, said that the eyes of children are the windows to heaven.
Right.
And when Hashem sends us a child, He's also sending us all the special instructions that we need to handle the situation. And He wants us to know that this child, all you need to do is daven and listen closely for your answer. And I'm sure that, you know, Caitlin thinks that she did that right too. But look, here's my final word on this thing. And this is something I say all the time, and I will continue saying it forever, because I really believe it works in every situation, and that is that God does not make mistakes when He creates
yes.
human beings.
Yes.
Only human beings make mistakes through ignorance. And if we put it a different way, everything and everyone is perfect in Hashem's eyes, just as they are. And it's our eyes that needs correcting.
Yes.
And it means that we have to correct our view of things, but not take a knife, to change who we are. You know, all of our lives, historically, even with disabilities, were viewed as, the model of disability was that they were sick. People who were disabled were sick, and they needed to be fixed, right? And it's
yes.
only now that this new culture, this new cultural model, is that we've been challenged to come up with a different model that we realize that you're not sick and that you don't need corrective surgery and you don't need to be treated, you know, as a mentally ill, quote unquote, person, you know, that it's not an illness to have to be a little bit off or odd. It's okay, and we accept you as you are. And to be able to go through life dealing with your challenges and your situation is not to succumb to the personal desires that go well beyond the category of human challenge. God gave us each a challenge, and it's our
yes.
obligation to try to do the best we can, but not to run for a surgeon's knife. You know, look, there was a time when frontal lobotomies were, you know, all the rage. And I'm sure that those people who had a frontal lobotomy to get rid of some of their problems were not too pleased with the outcome.
Right.
That was a permanent modification of their behavior. No question about
yes.
it. Today, you know, you're modifying genitalia, you're modifying, you know, hormones and you know, outwardly physical features. I can't believe for a moment that he's not, at 64, 65 years old, he's not still going through some amazing challenges. And look, I don't wish him anything bad. It's just that I find it difficult to understand how it's affecting our children and how it's going to ultimately have an effect on society, because this person has achieved a certain level of athletic prowess and then social status and now gender equality / inequality. I don't know. I have no answer for this one. Look, there are many things that come up in society. Gosh, you know, Torah tells us this is wrong. So
right.
That's the only thing I can tell you. That's all.
Okay. Eliezer, believe it or not, we've actually come to the end of the program. I hope I didn't redirect you too much from the intent you wanted to speak about today. Hopefully we'll get back. And it was great to reunite with you today. Any final messages? And also, how can people connect with you?
I was just going to tell everybody how they could get $1 million each, but we don't have time, so I'll do it next week.
Okay.
Redirection is good, you know. So, yeah, so anybody wants to get in touch with us, I gave the number to reach my wife, Hanatova, my Ace of Style, at, you know, for the Shinnok, the new database Shinnok program that we've begun. If you want to reach us, you can, if you want to help us out with our various projects, we're dealing with not only families and children who have had children and are having a difficult time accepting them, but we're also having dealing with adults here in Yerushalayim who are literally lost, and we're helping them out, and we're like the seeing eye dog of Down syndrome in Yerushalayim. And if you want to reach me here, you can reach me at 011-972-86-99972, or if you're in Yerushalayim, you can reach me at 052-86-99972. First number I gave was wrong. It's 011-972-52-86-99972. You can send a letter of any kind. You can send a letter of any denomination. How's that? To Heart to Heart, 383 Kingston Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11213. That's Suite 232. You can also you can go online to Heart to Heart American. That's www.hearttoheartamerican.org, and go to the donation page or peruse the rest of the stuff there. There's a lot of interesting information about who we are and what we're doing and you know, what our goals and objectives are. And if you want to reach Don Zusha Goodman, you can reach him at
347-613-4615.
That's it. That's the number. That's right. Absolutely. And
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just want to say thank you very much, and I wanted to add my after bracha, Baruch Atah.
Yes.
I have to zoom here. I'm going to let you finish up, but I just want to say, we should have a good Kibbutz week, a good Kibbutz Yor, a good Zimmer. We should remember to learn something from everyone.
Right.
Ezu Achachem Alomed Nikolarum, that somebody who learns from anyone, you learn something, they're your teacher forever, and you want to be a wise person, listen even to people who have Down syndrome, they can teach you a lot. Because
amen.
They make you feel like you got Up syndrome, man. And that's it. That's all I got.
All right.
I'll see you later.
Okay,
have a wonderful week.
Take care, Eliezer. Thank you very much, Rabbi Eliezer Goldstock, international human rights activist for the actualization of uniquely capable human beings. But so before we go off the air, I just want to mention that it's my pleasure and privilege to continue to collaborate with Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock, and it's my pleasure and privilege and my schus, my merit to dialogue with you, Bessels, whether you're listening to us live. You can also hear the archive version via Facebook. Go to my page, Don Zusha Goodman. Also, via the blogtalkradio.com network. And as well now through JApp, which j-app.me. And this is the most comprehensive, it is a most comprehensive free iPhone and Android mobile application that gives you global access to rabbis and educators in any field. I am not a rabbi. I am what is known as a Torah askan, a Torah activist. So that being said, let's just remind everyone, we all have to be good. And although that might generate some ambivalence within you, blessed souls, just remember, Hateva Tov Leheiti, but it's the nature of the good to do good. The Creator was the source of our goodness. In his goodness said, you should be here upon the face of this living earth. But what's the empowerment for that process? You've got a divine image which will help you get out in scrimmage. Your Tzelem Elohim is no dream. And of course, the most ultimate form of empowerment, which would come in a way of Darchei Noam, in a pleasant way, Darchei Shalom, in a pleasant way, in a peaceful way, Bahavachar, with one of Goralchar, one destiny for all of us, Bez Hashem Yisparech, with the help of the Most High to be continued, and here to sing about how we can get empowered with a little help from Hashem, the Diaspora Yeshiva Bland. My pronunciation was bland, but here's the Yeshiva Diaspora Band singing again with a little help from Hashem. Take care, everyone.
So can the champion run into the record books? ABC's Ron Claiborne is in Elmont, New York.
What would you think if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Bend your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Cause I get by with a little help from Hashem. I get high with a little help from Hashem, of course. I'm gonna try with a little help from Hashem. So would you believe?